Hello, we're back. I'm not Eric Jeffers again, for which he is profoundly grateful. I'm Sean McCune, and I'm going to talk about asynchronous programming in C# on Windows Runtime. Windows Runtime is an asynchronous runtime for all intents and purposes. Any operation that was greater than 50 milliseconds was essentially made asynchronous. And C# has several features that allow you to have a very easy way to both write and, more importantly, read and understand asynchronous code using the async and await keywords. And like most platforms, most UI platforms, you can only update the UI from the main thread. And so if you're doing something in another thread asynchronously and you need to update the UI based on the results of that processing, you need to do something to cause that UI updating code to happen on the main thread.
And when we say, just to make sure we, when we say that anything that takes 50 milliseconds or more, to clarify, what we've done is the people that designed the language said, oh, look, there are these operations that might take 50 milliseconds. There's no magic underneath where we look at something and we're like, oh, this is taking long, let's make it asynchronous or something.
Right, not on the fly.
What we've did is the, you know, the runtime designers said, look, all the operations that could take 50 milliseconds or long or longer, even if they don't, we will just write asynchronous API for. So for example, if you look at our file APIs where we are, you know, opening a file or reading and writing to a file, those are asynchronous by design. Right, so what you're going to see is you open up the API, the framework, and you're going to be like, oh, how do I save a file? And you're only going to have a save async method. You're not going to have a save method. But again, with what you're going to explain in a minute where we talk about await and async, we make it pretty easy for people to consume asynchronous operations. So so it's not going to be a lot of overhead, but that's just kind of what we designed for.
Right. So let's take 1 second and review how Coco handles asynchronous code. So as we say at the ranch, Coco got blocks. Bing it if you're interested. But blocks are lambdas, essentially, anonymous functions that Coco has. And GCD has queues, asynchronous dispatch queues that runs code asynchronously. You can run them both serially or concurrently asynchronously. And as with Windows 8 and every other platform with the UI, you have to update the UI on the main thread. And with GCD, there's a main queue that you can enqueue blocks to run on the main thread. So let's take a look at one of the ways that's most similar to Coco to do asynchronous code in Windows 8. So here's a method that is using the HTTP client object, and it's going to do an HTTP GET request to download Bing's homepage. And we're going to call GET async on the HTTP client object, which is going to run code asynchronously. It's going to run code in another thread to actually perform that GET request. But since it's happening asynchronously, this code will not block here in the calling thread. Get async will return very quickly and will return a task object that represents that code that's running asynchronously. And we immediately then call the task object's continue with method and pass in a lambda, an anonymous function that we want to run when the task is completed, when the actual HTTP GET request is completed. And this lambda gets passed in an HTTP response message object that here we're calling response that contains the results. And then we can do whatever processing we need to do with it. This lambda that we're passing in to the continue with method is known as a completion because it's the code that we want to run when the asynchronous task has completed. And note that the lambda here contains another asynchronous piece of code. It's going to take the response object, get its result, and get its contents, which are the actual HTTP message contents from the response. And we're going to call read as string async on it, which is going to read the actual contents of the downloaded response into a string. And that since it's doing that asynchronously, because it may be a lot of contents, it's going to return a task just like get async does, and we will immediately return continue with or call continue with on that task object to pass in the code that we want to run when we're done reading in that string. And in this case, this lambda that we're passing in to continue with just gets a string object, or sorry, a task object that contains the text result, which we simply are writing out to the debug console. So notice here we're actually chaining multiple snippets of asynchronous code to run one after the other. We have the initial get async, which runs code in a task to do the download. After it's complete, we run the very first continue with lambda, which immediately calls another async piece of code, which will run asynchronously. And when it completes, we run the fourth snippet of asynchronous code, which is the continue with lambda, the innermost continue with lambda.
And the interesting thing is, look, these continuations are very simple, but when this is real code, things get a little bit messier. It's
right.
Much harder to read. That's kind of the point to make here.
Right, yeah. This is very similar to Coco's blocks because we're passing in a lambda, and a block is, they're both closures. And in real-world code, you could have a lot of code here, you know, and you should probably wrap some of it up in a method so that it doesn't all have to be in line. But it can get rather verbose and crowded in there with lots of indents and lots of punctuation, lots of curly braces followed by parentheses, followed by semicolons. So it can get harder to read in the real world. So let's take a look at the way C# supports doing asynchronous programming with the async await feature. So we're going to do the same operation, only this time we're going to use async await. And notice that in this code, we have an async keyword in the signature of the method. That denotes that to the compiler that this method can run some code asynchronously. And we're still going to be using the HTTP client object and calling get async on it. But in front of the call to get async, we use the await keyword. And when client.getAsync creates the task that it's going to run asynchronously, it returns that task object, but this time it's returning it to that await keyword. And in the calling thread, that await is going to immediately return to the caller of this method, so it doesn't block, just like before. However, when the task that getAsync is running, that's downloading the home page of Bing, when it's completed, the await then runs all of the code that follows the await, from the var result, getting the results of the await operation, all the way down to the end of the method. And that code is known as the continuation. That's what continues, that's what will run after we have awaited the completion of the get async operation. But notice that it allows you to write this code in what looks like straight down the screen procedural code, line after line, you know, gets executed. It doesn't, because the compiler generates code to implement a state machine that takes the pieces of this method and runs them whenever the various asynchronous bits complete. So again, when get async finishes its download, the continuation that's been awaiting its completion will run because of the state machine. And notice that the very next thing we do is we hit another await statement. Just like before, we read the contents in asynchronously. And so we're going to await that result. And there's a second continuation there, which is the string text variable getting assigned, and then the rest of the code. So again, we have chained serial or chain synchronous operations that are going to be executed serially, and it's very similar to queuing up multiple blocks on the on a serial queue in GCD. The only difference is we don't have to have a queue object, and we can simply write code that looks procedural, you know, straight down the line. So it's a very easy, compact way to write the code. It's very easy to understand once you realize that that await keyword lets you return to the caller automatically, but there's this state machine in the background that takes the continuation that comes after the await and will run that as soon as the asynchronous task is completed.
Yep.
So I'm going to demo that code to give you a better idea of how that runs. You know, I'll set some breakpoints so you can see when the actual code runs. So we'll take a look at these exact same code, the exact same code you saw in the slides. So here's the async keyword method. I have a breakpoint that I've set right after the second await, so that all of this code that you see here should finish, all this asynchronous code, getting Bing's homepage and reading it into a string, that should all complete asynchronously before we hit this debug line breakpoint. That means that we would have returned already to the caller of this method long before we hit this breakpoint. And then we also have the, I'm going the wrong way here. And we also have, wow, this is strange, the completion method where we pass in the lambda. I have the same thing. I've passed in or has set a breakpoint right in the lambda that gets sent into the second read as string async call. Again, this will only hit after we've done all the asynchronous operations. And so by then, you know, we would have returned to the caller. And if I go down to the code that actually calls these two methods, this is a method that gets called in response to clicking on a button in the UI, and you'll see that in a moment. And we're just going to run both of these methods. And I have breakpoints set at these debug write lines right after each of these methods. We should see these happen first because we're going to call this first, the async keyword method, and as soon as we hit the await in there, we will immediately return and hit this breakpoint because we will not block there because the rest of the code runs asynchronously. And then we'll immediately run the second asynchronous method, the download file using completion, and as soon as we hit the continue with method that we call there, we'll be done. We'll return from that method while the asynchronous code has yet to run, and we will hit this breakpoint. So both these breakpoints will occur before the breakpoints in the asynchronous code to prove that, you know, we are actually running asynchronously. So here is the, that's running from before, so I'm going to start it back up from scratch. There we go. Okay, so up at the upper left-hand part of the screen, you can see this button that says async keyword in it. I'm going to click it, and the first breakpoint we hit is this one because we've executed the download file using async keyword and it does not block. We did not hit the breakpoints in the asynchronous code yet. I'm going to continue. We blew right through the download file using completion method, did not block, and we hit this breakpoint. And now, eventually, this asynchronous code has completed. We hit its breakpoint. This is in the using completion method. Notice that it happened first. It completed first, even though it was called after the async keyword method. And continue on. And then we hit the breakpoint from the download file using async keyword. So these continuations are running asynchronously after the asynchronous calls to get the homepage of Bing and to read in the contents asynchronously has completed.
Yep.
So I'll switch back and continue on. Now here's an example of that state machine. This is generated code from the compiler based on that method that uses the async and await mechanism. There's a tool from JetBrains called .peek that essentially is a decompiler. And so it decompiled the actual running code, and you can see the state machine that the compiler generates. It creates a structure called, well, D underscore underscore zero. This is not very human readable because it's generated code, but it creates a structure for the download file using async keyword method, and it inherits from an I async state machine interface. And it has a method that basically has lifted bits and pieces out of the method that we wrote and put them inside a state machine that it can run to run these things asynchronously. And so .peek is a free tool. You can download it and run it on the example that you just saw and dig more into this state machine. But it's not very human readable. But it's a interesting tool to, you know, take a look at and see what's going on under the hood.
This is not something users will ever need to see.
Right.
So that's we're just showing you what's under the hood so you know how it's implemented.
Right. This is if you're interested in seeing exactly how the async await mechanism is actually running these things asynchronously and serially stringing these asynchronous snippets together.
Yep.
So if you notice, if I back up here, at the very bottom of this method, there's a method called swap button text async, which sounds like it's going to swap the UI text in the button on the screen. And if that's UI code and it's running in this continuation, we know that we can't just update the UI from within this continuation because it's running in another thread. So let's take a look at how we do that. So here is that method, and it is asynchronous. So we're going to run something in another thread. You can probably guess that we're going to run something on the main UI thread so that we can update the UI. So immediately what we're going to do is we're going to await something, and we're going to await a task that's going to run the UI code asynchronously. And what we're going to do is we're going to take the this object, which is the object that this method lives in, which is presumably a page object, and you'll be seeing more of the page object when we get into the XAML code in a later section. But it's a UI object. It's a page that defines what you see on the screen. And we access its dispatcher property. And the dispatcher is the thing that is responsible for running Windows events and processing them for the UI. So if we're getting that object, we're going to be getting something that runs on the main thread. And we're going to call run async on it to hand it a lambda so that it can run it on the main thread. Now, the dispatcher has a priority. I've never used anything other than normal. And then we pass in a dispatched handler containing the lambda of the UI code that we want to have update the UI. And it's simply going to swap the text of the button between two values simply for demonstration purposes. So that you can see the slide, it's not anything real. So that's how you would run a lambda on the main thread to update your UI. For the sake of completeness, here's that code that the button click calls. You know, so you can see that calling these asynchronous methods that we created are nothing special. You just call them as normal, and you just have to remember that these methods don't block. They're going to return immediately, while the asynchronous code that is been set up is probably not yet even started, much less completed yet. So a few notes about async methods. You cannot have ref or out parameters in your async methods because we have to pass everything in by value because they're going to be running in another thread. And we can't have things being done to them between tasks. They have to have return types of either void, task, or task of type T, result. It's a result type. The reason is the caller is going to be returned a value by that await statement. And if the type is void, obviously there's no value being returned by the await statement. And that's for a kind of fire and forget asynchronous operation. The caller simply wants to kick off the asynchronous operation and doesn't care about it, doesn't want to know when it's done or if there's any result value. It's just going to start it off and let it go. So that's a void return type. But the caller may want to know when the task is completed. And so you can return a task as the return type of your async code. And the await will see that, and when it returns to the calling routine, it will return the task that the statement that it's awaiting, such as that HTTP client's get async method, returns to it. And it can use that task to interrogate to find out when it's completed or not. It can also return a task of result type T. So if you're doing an operation that has a result value, it's doing some calculation and it's going to come up with a number, or it's going to come up with some more complex object that is a result of whatever it's been doing, that can be the result type and a result value that's set in the task. And the caller may want to not only know when the task is complete, but it might want to find out what that value is and do something with it. So you can return a result of task of type T, and the await statement will return that. And so you can make use of the result. Finally, lambdas and anonymous methods can be asynchronous. So you don't have to just create methods that are asynchronous. You can, on the fly, create a snippet of code, whether it's a lambda or anonymous function, and make it async, simply by putting the async in the method, a signature, basically where you have the parentheses, after the arrow operator, and you can also then use the await inside the body of the lambda. Now, in the operations that you saw before, the asynchronous operation being performed in another task was being handled by a Windows runtime API call, such as HTTP clients get async method. But you may have your own long-running operations that you want to be able to call asynchronously. And so here's how you would do that. So I'm assuming here that we have a plain old synchronous calculate Fibonacci method that's going to calculate a Fibonacci value, which can take a long time for large values. So we want to be able to call it asynchronously. So we create an asynchronous version of the method by tacking on the word async at the end of the method name, but more importantly, using the async keyword at the beginning. And we give it a result type of task of type int64, because we want the caller to be able to see the result when the task is done. And the way we run it asynchronously is we actually send the calculate Fibonacci call into task.run, and we await its return. So we don't have to just use Windows API calls that are asynchronous. We can create our own. Here's a little bit more about the tasks. Task objects can run tasks asynchronously, and you don't have to use them with the async await method. You can simply pass in a lambda and into a new task and start it, and it will run asynchronously. But it's a lot more convenient when using the async await operation, because you can use it to essentially queue up serial bits of asynchronous code, just like queuing up blocks on a serial dispatch queue in Cocoa. So that's it for async, and I'm going to move quickly into web services, because you've already seen a bit of that in the async code. So web services are basically using the HTTP client object that you saw before, and you can call get async on it. You can await that to get the response asynchronously, and it returns an HTTP response message object. There's an ensure success status code method that will essentially throw an exception anytime the result code of an HTTP request is not in the 200 range, 200 to 299. And then, of course, you can read the contents asynchronously. However, there's a little more to it than that. There are several methods that basically implement the HTTP get requests, delete requests, post requests, and put requests. And you can pass in a URI either as a URI object or as a string. And for the post and puts, you can also pass in an HTTP content object that contains the contents that you want to post or put. And there's also a send async method that lets you construct an HTTP request message separately of whatever type you want, and then pass it into the send async method to have the request executed. And all of these methods return a task of type HTTP response message. There are a few alternative GET request methods. You can get your results as a byte array, as a string array, or as a stream, and you can stream the results in. And anytime you're going to be doing GET requests where the downloaded response might be 50 megabytes or larger, you probably want to use GetStream Async, because that will give you much better performance than using the default buffering of the other GET methods. Finally, there's another web request object, HTTP web request, which lets you create any kind of HTTP verb, not only get and put and post and delete, but also option, trace, and head. And you can set the method directly. You can set the headers, both standard headers and custom headers. And you can stream in the contents that you want to post or put, and then stream out the results from the response. And so I'm very early, so I hope there's some questions. Let me check that. This has to log in.
I can check. There wasn't that many. There's a couple comments on async in a way. It looks really clean. There's a comment on, are the continuations run on the main thread?
Generally, no, because the main thread, it could queue, it could run something asynchronously on the main thread and be handled in a loop, but it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, async, the continuations will come back to the thread that called it. Mm-hmm. So when we call, like for example, in this case, you were calling, if you call the get async from the UI thread, the HTTP get is going to happen on a background thread, comes out of the thread pool, but then when it returns back, yes, we will move you back to the UI thread. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it'll just come down to the calling thread, which I think is where you're going anyway.
Right. And then, of course, from within that continuation, even if it's running on the main thread, if you do another asynchronous operation, of course, that asynchronous operation will run in another thread, and then its continuation would come back to whatever its calling thread was. So it depends what thread you start out on when you call an asynchronous method. That's where the continuation will run.
Yep. So that's the one question that's about async await. There's a couple in there which somebody was asking, debugging to service RT devices via USB when using VMware. And I now understand the question better because I didn't quite understand it earlier. Because they're just looking at how to debug. My answer there was, if you're going to debug against a service RT, use the remote debugger using network like TCP IP APIs. It's much easier, much cleaner, much more performant. I don't specifically know if we support it out of a USB, like connected via USB. I thought the answer was no, but I've never done it, so I don't want to say no. So JPM, let's think offline. But if you want to debug, like what I said earlier was, if you want to debug onto Surface RT devices running on ARM, then you can use remote debugger using networking, like TCP IP, and it works great. It's pretty seamless.
Yeah, the remote debugging for the RT over Wi-Fi is really handy because the Surface RT is a portable device, and you can sit there in front of your development machine and hold the Surface and do your thing with the UI and watch the debugger, and it is very handy using it over Wi-Fi.
Yep. And then there's one more comment there it's been there for a while, and can I develop iOS applications using Visual Studio 2012? So no, all we're talking about here is building Windows Store apps. So you can definitely develop Windows Store apps from within your Mac OS, using Bootcamp or virtualization again, but we're talking about building Windows Store apps. Apple has this policy where they don't let anybody build iPhone apps outside of Mac anyway, outside of their Apple Mac OS environment anyway. Like Xamarin has to even compile on their environment anyway. So that's it. You don't get Visual Studio for developing iPhone apps yet. So those are the two questions that we had. So if we don't have any more questions, we can give them what we call the meal break here. So we're going to come back at the top of the hour. Right now I have 12:12. So that means we'll have 45 to 48 minutes. And then we're going to come back. And in the afternoon, we're going to cover SAMU. We're going to cover all the app model. And then we're going to cover contracts and notifications real quick and the store. So we have a pretty packed afternoon. Is there any way to give them a half an hour break instead of a 45-minute break?
Best you go live top of the hour.
Yeah. All right, we'll go live top of the hour, 1 o'clock, and then we're going to go 60 miles per hour. All right, thanks for sticking around. We'll see you soon.
Thanks.